On this week's 51%, COVID has changed so much in our lives. Community dance is off the table, and a group of senior citizens is learning to get by without it for now.
You know, we greet each other with our elbows, but sometimes we can talk a little bit and, hi, how you doing, miss you, and everybody seems to be doing well.
Plus, hear about the first woman composer to have music published. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. About 4 months ago, we brought you a story about a woman who had co-founded a community dance class that helped senior citizens fight inactivity and isolation. The group dancing was put on hold during the COVID-19 pandemic, taking away a social outlet so vital for many. The community class was still on hold at the time of this airing. Joanne Jones is the co-founder of the free line dancing class for senior citizens in Nashville, Tennessee's Hadley Park neighborhood. WPLN producer David Kondos brings us an update to his earlier story.
Hello.
Hi, Joanne. This is David.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, thanks. I'm doing great. Just a little bored.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm doing great.
Joanne Jones is a 79-year-old retired school teacher. It's around 11 a.m. on a Tuesday morning when she picks up the phone. She's sitting at her home north of downtown Nashville, and until recently, her Tuesday mornings were anything but boring. That's because she's a founding member of the Hadley Park Line Dancers. It's a free dance class for senior citizens that meets on Tuesday and Thursday mornings. For longtime members like Joanne, the group has become a family. But like all of us who have lost something we love due to the pandemic,
we haven't been dancing. And we miss it. But we gotta do what we gotta do.
During a simpler time, I actually went and danced with Joanne's class. It was just a few weeks before the pandemic started, and it wasn't hard to see what Joanne loved so much about this group. Now, when I say it's a dance class for seniors, you might picture couples slow dancing to Nat King Cole, but you'd be wrong. Don't be fooled by the fact that most of this group is over 65. They're here to sweat and have fun doing it. The dancers stand side by side in long lines. They dip, they turn, they twist, they slide up and down the basketball court. They're a tight-knit community. And there's one woman who stands out.
Everyone loves Joanne.
She's an awesome lady.
Joanne is wonderful and a blessing. Joanne is my inspiration.
You might call Joanne the matriarch of this family. She helped form the group and used to be their lead dance instructor.
Oh, Miss Joanne dancing? She taught us, so she had to be outstanding.
Joanne began leading the class 12 years ago. In those days, 10 seniors might show up. Now, they pack 50, 75, even 100 people into this gym twice a week.
I consider them my sisters and my brothers. So we're definitely family. It's like one big happy family. To see the group dancing in unison, everybody together, is beautiful.
Volunteer instructors call out the steps, although most of the group knows each song by heart.
I like Push It. I like Jamie Foxx. I like Flashing. I like them all.
Joanne's in her usual spot in the front row. She's petite and slender with short black hair. She's wearing sneakers and a lime green shirt with the group's logo printed in sparkles.
I love to dance. And as my husband said, she dances in the kitchen. She dances in... I dance all over the house because I love it.
And do you really? You dance in the kitchen all
yes,
over the house?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. If I hear something come on, the TV or the radio, I'll dance to it. Dancing was just in me because we grew up dancing.
Joanne was born in 1941 and grew up in the Jim Crow era in South Memphis. Her father worked on the railroad to support a family of 12.
All 10 of us went to school, graduated. Even though we were segregated, we had fun growing up.
One of the things that helped her through was the community she found around music. Joanne and her friends would gather around the radio and turn the dial to 1070 AM.
Yes, indeed, 1070, that's it. That means WDIA. That's 50,000 watts of powerful entertainment for your pleasure.
That's Memphis's WDIA, America's first black radio station.
Thank you very kindly.
And it provided the soundtrack for a lot of Joanne's best memories from back then, including one of her favorites, which happened on Monday nights. That's when all the kids in her neighborhood headed to the YMCA, took off their shoes, and danced.
Come on, baby! Let's do the twist. Come on, baby!
What'd you think about it? Did you love it from the beginning?
Loved it. Loved it. And that was one of the criteria. If we behaved, we'd get to go to the sock hop on Mondays. That was our reward.
They'd turn on some WDIA and do a dance called the bop. But these sock hops were about more than just bopping.
So it was really like a reunion to meet, to be together again, and to enjoy something that was fun together.
Do you think about the time when eventually you might have to stop dancing?
I don't think about that. I'm sure, you know, that's inevitable. You know, we all got to get to a point where can't do what you used to do. But I don't even think about that anymore.
But 7 years ago, she was forced to think about it.
It came upon me so suddenly. I just felt like my world had just ended.
Joanne started feeling cramps in her hands, then some joint pain in her legs. She went to the doctor and was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. The pain grew more and more severe until she couldn't even walk. She had to use a cane and sometimes even a wheelchair. Dancing with her friends at Hadley Park was no longer a viable option. She stepped down from leading the group and stopped coming to class.
I felt my life was over. What am I gonna do? All the things that I enjoy so much, I can't do anymore. And I just gave up. I had a pity party. I was staying in. I was moody. I was crying. And loneliness is one of those feelings that nobody wants to ever have to endure. It's like you're isolated. It's just you.
This is a common feeling among seniors, the isolation that comes with age, not being able to get out and do what you love. That's why the community these dancers have found at Hadley Park is so vital.
Yeah, we have a lot of folks that came in and, you know, they was like secluded. They, you know, some of them like wasn't friendly, but the class has brought them closer together.
Sharon Jarrett is another member of the group. She first showed up back when Joanne was leading the class, and she wasn't even sure she wanted to be there.
I was one of the students. I had two left feet. I couldn't dance. I didn't know what they was doing.
But Joanne kept encouraging her.
Kept telling me, come back, Sharon, come back. Just keep coming back. You'll learn.
And she did. Thanks to Joanne and the other dancers, Sharon eventually became the lead dance instructor. She's now serving her sixth year as the group's president.
I mean, I love it. I mean, this was like a God gift sent to me because I was like, line dancers, I don't know about no line dancers. And then to get to teach, oh, it's like priceless. I mean, I love it.
That community and sense of family is what makes the Hadley Park Line Dancers so much more than a dance class. After 6 months of sitting at home with arthritis, Joanne was stuck in what she describes as a pity party. But her friends and family knew how much this group meant to her. So after a lot of encouragement, they eventually talked her into coming back to class, even if she wasn't physically able to dance.
And I would just watch. I would watch them.
Then something wonderful happened.
After a while, it started getting better. I started moving a little bit, but it was very painful.
Joanne fought through the pain and moved as much as she could. Little by little, her joints started to feel better. She didn't know if she'd ever be able to dance the way she used to, but she knew that she didn't want arthritis to come between her and her Hadley Park family ever again.
I pulled myself up and got it together and made up my mind that, hey, this is not gonna get me. Everything changes when you have that support system. And I am so happy that they are a part of my life. And I'm hoping and praying that they will remain a part of my life.
All right, y'all ready?
Joanne knows that she and her friends get older with each Tuesday that passes.
Want a party?
Some dance moves are still painful. Doing a twist sometimes bothers the arthritis in her knee.
One, two, three, swing.
And some of the other founding members have passed away.
And we put on our Hadley Park t-shirts and we go as a group to the services.
It's that kind of family.
It's that kind of family. Illness, death, in the group, we're supported. That's just the way we are. I say, enjoy life because this is the only life you have. Tomorrow's not promised. Have fun. Dance, dance, dance. And more dance.
But this year, the group's bond has been tested more than ever. And I'm not just talking about COVID-19.
Before the pandemic, you know, we had the tornado come through.
In the early morning hours of March 3rd, an F3 tornado tore across Middle Tennessee. Its path ran directly between Joanne's home and Hadley Park, through the historically black neighborhoods of North Nashville. When the dust settled, the storm had caused $1.5 billion in damage and injured 220 people. Almost overnight, the community center became a shelter for those displaced in the neighborhood. The gym that would normally be filled with rows of dancers now held rows of beds.
The tornado, you know, destroyed their homes. So they were living there temporarily.
So the group danced at a different community center that week. Then a church the week after that. But just as Nashville began to pick up the pieces from that tornado,
have decided to cancel classes tomorrow.
Several mid-state churches are closing some.
Well, it was on radio that things would be closed. And then Sharon, our president, she called us all and told us that the center would be closed. But, you know, at first you don't think long range. I didn't think that it would be this long. But as time went on, you know, after a month or so, I saw it was getting increasingly worse. I realized that, well, it will be a while before we can get back.
Gathering dozens of senior citizens for an hour of hugs, laughs, and indoor exercise suddenly became unthinkable. Like all of us, the pandemic has forced Joanne and the dancers to find new ways to keep their community together. The things we're all doing, checking in with video chats and staying connected on social media. Instead of gathering every week at the Hadley Park Gym, Joanne now meets up with a couple of other dancers for socially distanced walks on a trail near her home. Sometimes she'll run into another dancer at the grocery store.
Yeah, we just say, hey, you know, we don't touch or anything like that. We do elbows sometimes and, you know, we'll greet each other with our elbows, but sometimes we can talk a little bit and, hi, how you doing, miss you. And everybody seems to be doing well, which is good news.
And just because class is canceled, that doesn't mean they need to stop dancing completely. Joanne says she's still known to dance across the kitchen when the mood strikes her. Every once in a while, she and her friends will break out a few dance steps during one of those trail walks.
So we're still together. We're apart, but we're not apart.
Yeah, you're finding a way.
We're finding a way to be together.
Thanks to her community, 7 years after arthritis put her in a wheelchair, Joanne now walks 3 miles nearly every morning.
There are going to always be obstacles in your way. Always. And they might get harder each time. But you grow. And as you grow, so does your spirit. And it helps you to overcome. So we'll just wait for the next one and be ready to challenge it. Can't give up.
And she looks forward to the day when they can dip, slide, and twist together once more.
And I think we can overcome anything because we're together and we respect and love each other. And for that reason, we can face any challenges. So we will be stronger and better when we get back.
David Kondos originally produced this story for the podcast Neighbors. His previous story on 51% was in show number 1609. And new data from UN Women and the United Nations Development Program shows COVID-19 will widen the poverty gap between women and men. The pandemic will push 47 million more women and girls below the poverty line, reversing decades of progress to eradicate extreme poverty. The poverty rate for women was expected to decrease by 2.7% between 2019 and 2021, but projections now point to an increase of 9.1% due to the pandemic and its fallout. By 2021, for every 100 men aged 25 to 34 living in extreme poverty, and that's living on $1.90 a day or less, there will be 118 women, a gap that is expected to increase to 121 women per 100 men by 2030. Meantime, the COVID-19 pandemic has left some military families in limbo. This spring, the Pentagon issued a stop movement order prohibiting service members from transferring to new bases. Now, months later, some moves are taking place, but other troops and their families remain frozen in place. From San Diego, Steve Walsh reports for the American Homefront Project.
This is our home for the moment.
Adaptability is part of Navy life. For Kylie McFerrin and her family, that's meant living in an RV at a campground in the Laguna Mountains. It's about an hour away from the ocean, where her husband continues to work at Naval Base Coronado in San Diego County.
It has been difficult. There have been a lot of times where you have to tell yourself, this is only temporary. This is not forever. Tomorrow's a new day.
The McFerrin sold their home when her husband received orders transferring him to Maryland. They were forced to move out in July, but by then, the Navy had put his move on hold. With two young kids and no place to live, their best option was to buy an RV and search for campgrounds.
Finding more permanent housing in an RV is a little challenging. A lot of places require a membership. Some places are just booked because most people make these plans months and years in advance. And we are trying to do it last minute.
Her family is one of thousands caught up in the military's stop movement order, which went into effect in March. In July, the Pentagon began loosening restrictions. About 40% of the 230 U.S. military installations worldwide have reopened. because they met requirements like having fewer COVID-19 cases for at least 14 days. Assistant Commander of Navy Personnel Captain Derek Trank says bases also needed to be operating closer to normal.
They have to have essential services like childcare. There can't be a local travel restriction.
But San Diego naval bases are still on the red list, though the Navy is making exceptions.
We have a waiver process. We were able to get sailors moved because they had a hardship or because they were essential to the mission of the new command.
Waivers have helped dramatically clear the Navy's backlog. The Navy originally expected it would take until sometime next year to move the nearly 24,000 waiting families. Now it expects to have the rest of those families at their new bases by November. The number of cases of coronavirus in the military has plateaued in the last week or so, though coronavirus cases had been surging through July, even as the Navy was pushing to get more sailors moving. Trank says the Navy is convinced it's reopening safely.
Because we are taking those steps to keep our people safe, I believe it is allowing us to make these moves, whereas before, everybody stop moving really was the right answer because we knew so little.
Still, determining why one base is open to travel and another base is closed can be confusing for military families. Early in the pandemic, the Pentagon stopped listing COVID cases by base. In San Diego County, along with the Navy, the Marines' West Coast boot camp is still red flagged, but the Marines are free to transfer in and out of Camp Pendleton. Navy spouse Kelly Kopeck is finally on her way to the East Coast from San Diego. She spoke from the road.
Nobody seemed to really know what information to give us or what advice to give us or that type of thing. And it was a lot of hurry up and wait.
Just like the McFerrins, the Kopecks also brought an RV when they needed a place to live after they sold their house in San Diego. Now they are finally traveling cross-country to Virginia with their seven-month-old, with the help of a Navy waiver.
Something that would be incredibly helpful and beneficial to a future pandemic or other extreme situation, maybe to allow for case management in this.
That would give families a point of contact, like when they have sailors deployed. The Kopecks will be required to self-isolate for 14 days at their new base. The RV will make that easier, while other families wait for their turn to hit the road. In San Diego, I'm Steve Walsh.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans.
100 years ago, American women won the right to vote. I'm Marty Moscoane. This is Women 100, a series celebrating women who made possible a century of progress. Women like Grace Hopper, born in 1906, one of America's first computer scientists and among the first women in the U.S. Navy to achieve the rank of Rear Admiral. During World War II, she joined the Navy's Division for Women and was assigned its computation project, where she worked on the first programmable computer. She was on the team that developed UNIVAC, the first commercial universal computer, invented the compiler, a translation system, and co-developed COBOL, an early computer language still used today. She worked as a computer consultant until her death in 1992 at the age of 85. Produced by WHYY with Drexel University. For more information, go to whyy.org/women100.
You're listening to Timeline from VPR Classical, a journey into the characters, concepts, and events that help shape our Western musical tradition. I'm James Stewart. The Renaissance was a time of rebirth, as science and the arts changed the face of culture. However, some old ideas persisted in the midst of this change, especially beliefs about the roles and intellectual capacity of the genders. Even though the Renaissance saw many female heads of state, it was still held as common knowledge that women were inferior to men, physically, mentally, and artistically. As a result, we have very few examples of female composers during this period of music history. There is an exception, though, the work of Maddalena Caziolana. Perhaps you have never heard that name before, but the Italian composer Maddalena Caziolana has the distinction of being the first female composer to have her music printed and published. In fact, it's possible that Maddalena's first book of madrigals, printed in Venice in 1568, is the first book by a woman to ever be published. We know very little about Madalena's life. It's highly possible that her second title, Kazialana, refers to her birthplace, though scholars disagree. The little we do know about her comes from the introductions and dedications she wrote in her three volumes of madrigals.
I want to show the world as much as I can in this profession of music the vain error of men that they alone possess the gifts of intellect and artistry, and that such gifts are never given to women.
Apparently, Madalena made an impression in Europe in the late 1560s, both as a singer and a composer. She earned the patronage of Isabella de' Medici, a noblewoman with a notoriously free spirit. Madalena dedicated the majority of her 66 madrigals to her. In 1568, her work, Nothing is More Enjoyable, was sung at a banquet in Munich for the wedding of Wilhelm IV of Bavaria, conducted by Orlando de Lasso. Unfortunately, this work and much of Madalena's history has been lost to time. For the decade between 1570 and 1580, there is no mention of Madalena at all. It's highly possible that she married during this time, but we are uncertain of her husband's name and where they were living. She reappears in 1582, performing at a wedding in Perugia. Her last book of madrigals was printed in 1583, and the last work attributed to her at all is dated 1586. We can only estimate that she died somewhere around 1590. It would be decades before another female composer would have her works published and performed. Find out more about Madalena Kazialana and follow the timeline at vpr.net/classical.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Tina Rennick for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1627.